Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Sad to hear about indigenous businesses forced to close. It seems to be one law for Irish businesses and another for multinationals. That's from Paul. Well, that's your opinion, Paul. I understand exactly what you mean. There'd be a lot more sympathy for the hospitality industry getting the VAT rate reduced. If it wasn't for the fact the last time it was reduced, it wasn't passed on to the customers and staff. And that's from Mark. So, Mark, is it possible that the difference in the VAT rate is how they survived by charging that? That they had the extra margin to survive. Look, I don't know the answers, I don't know the economics around it as well, but it's obviously a topic that needs to be expanded on, because seeing local businesses and important local businesses, and that's the heart of the community. I was in a shop in Crumlin yesterday, just beside Crumlin. It's really dreamy now, beside Crumlin Children's Hospital. I went in, there was a man who owns the shop working behind the counter. Three little girls went in, I'd say they were about 9 or 10. Three girls dressed up to the nines with handbags went in, and he greeted them and he said, "How are you ladies? You're back to get some bargains." And they were like, "Yeah, we're back for bargains." Meanwhile, he was packing the trolley for an elderly woman and calling her by name. So, you know, local businesses, they attract people who own the place and will obviously be there for a long time. And also employees tend to stay longer with local businesses and not move on quite as quickly as they do with multinationals or large franchises. So that's just the case. Now, we move along. James Durney loves history. And he's sitting right in front of me. James, good morning to you.
Morning, Shay.
And he loves stories about jailbreaks. And you've written a book on the subject and you're sitting in front of me to talk about it. Jailbreak, Ireland, Great Irish Republican Escapes. And I have it in front of me here, and it's a weighty tome with pictures and everything like that. How are you this morning?
Oh, great. Yeah, it's a great book. Covers Republican escapes from 1865 up to 1983. And again, like you say, love jailbreaks, but just probably my first experience with jailbreaks was The Great Escape with Steve McQueen and Richard Attenborough and all those crew from the movie, and would have seen it in the 70s and that. And everybody loves a jailbreak.
I'm not going to be pretend that I'm a fabulous movie buff or anything like that, but I printed off the cast list. Well, I'm going to, you know it. Yeah. Steve McQueen, James Garner, Richard Attenborough, James Donald as Captain Ramsay, of course, Charles Bronson, Donald Pleasant, James Coburn, forgot about him, David McCallum, Gordon Jackson, the list goes on, and the people who played the German officers as well. There's two pages of it here of stars. It was a great film, but that particular film, you think, has resonance with something in your book.
Yeah, the one from the escape from the RAT internment camp in Nacora in September 1921, which happens during the truce period and the negotiation period coming up to the Anglo-Irish Treaty being signed. And prisoners at that time, they weren't being released. The internees were not being released, so they decided they were going to go anyway. They decided to break out because they didn't expect the negotiations to result in a treaty. They're expecting the truce to break down. So these are going to go back into action, back into active service. So about 54 of them, I could count, escaped from the RAT internment camp in one September night. And it had started off as there was two tunnels heading to the perimeter wire. And one of them, the Jim Brady, who was a miner who had experienced mining in the Arigna mines, he was digging a tunnel called Brady's Tunnel. The Dublin Brigade Tunnel was heading in the same direction, but Brady's Tunnel reached there first. So the two groups got together, they took 25 men or thereabouts from each group and broke out through a tunnel. But like The Great Escape, it comes up short. The wire is further than the anticipated, and it come up couple of yards short from the wire. So what they do is they run a length of twine from the exit hole to the barbed wire where they cut through the wire and they get out. And that's kind of similar to what you see in The Great Escape. Also, they have to have a ventilation system in the tunnel because it gets very dark and sticky down there at night and that. So they put ventilation spikes up through the ground then to give them a bit of air and all that. And then distributing the soil then, because when you have to get the soil back up and get rid of it and not be seen around the camp, it's much similar to what you see in The Great Escape, where the guys are going around with soil in their trouser pockets, distributing it all around the camp, kicking it around and walking over it and that, and then putting it in their under the building itself, in under the huts themselves. And I would imagine that the British War Office would have studied how Republicans had escaped from jails in Ireland during the War of Independence, and then used some of those tactics then in the Second World War, because you see a lot of similarities to the escapes.
It's interesting that have you come up with a different figure for the number of people who escaped than maybe historical records would say? Because you've researched this quite carefully, and you've gone through news records and newspapers, etc.
Yeah, like you would always say around 50 was the figure, but I came up with a total of 54. I was able to name every one of them and do a little kind of bio on each one of the escapees in that, and I came up with 54. There's another big escape then from Newbridge Barracks during the Civil War, which was 112 prisoners escaped, and they escaped over two nights, on the 28th and 29th of October, Saturday night and a Sunday night, and they get a tunnel down into a sewer, and then they escape through the sewer then out to the Liffey and escape. And that's the greatest, I call that one the greatest escape, because it's bigger than any others, because the figures are higher than any other jailbreak ever in Irish or British penal history. And one of the main escapees out of that is Squire Scannon, the first man to lift the Sam Maguire in 1928 for Kildare. And he's a prisoner, he's an anti-treaty prisoner in Newbridge.
It is important to say you're a Kildare man.
Yeah, definitely.
You're wearing a white jersey there, I said.
Definitely, yeah. Well, that was my attraction. It was kind of looking at escapes in my home county, because the Curra, right up to the 1970s, was housing Republican prisoners. That drew my interest generally, but this one is a whole nationwide book of escapes and escapees.
Going through the book and looking at the pictures, one of the things that people tend to talk about famous things and famous escapes, but actually you've gone back and you've remembered names, because there are names from prominent Republican families from the time, but there are other people who didn't have any provenance, let's say. Mm-hmm. Their families weren't well known, they weren't political families, they weren't necessarily military families, but you've found the names of people who had kind of been lost.
Yeah, that's what I tried to do, and much of the writing that I did was try to get the small person into the narrative of history. Because we all, as you say, we all know the big names. We know about Dev's escape from Lincoln Jail. We know about Michael Collins, Pierce Beasley, Harry Boland, all these guys. But what I try to do then is try to name everyone that escaped, and possibly even if at the time their age and address, because it just goes to show what type of people were jailed at that time. So that's one of the ideas, is it to kind of give the small person a little place in history as well.
I think historians like yourself, and I'm not going to say amateur historians, because I don't think there is such a thing as an amateur historian. The only thing, the difference between an amateur historian is one gets paid for it and one does it for love. Because I don't think you'd be buying a new house out of the money you make out of the book.
I might be going on a holiday, all right.
Will you? Well, hopefully, after this interview, I hope you will, because we've given a plug now at the end. It's Marion Press as well, very important to say that. So we'll put that up on the website and maybe send it out on socials as well, if anybody wants to buy it. So where do you, and I think amateur genealogists as well will be listening this morning, the fact that you're able to find those names, can you just give us a little idea about how you went about it?
Well, I'd always a great interest in history. We had my granny and my mother would have been kind of always talking about people locally that had been involved in such a thing, like, you know, whether it was the Titanic, whether it was the First World War, whether it was the Black and Tans, the Second World War. And again, my father was in the military. He was in the Congo and Cyprus and that. So I had a big interest in history generally. But I had a big interest in local history because, especially my home county, when I tried to read about what was happening in Kildare in this period, there was nothing written. Or else you might just get a paragraph here, there or anywhere. So that's what kind of led me into writing books about my own county, which I did about the escapes, and then about the Second World War, the First World War, the revolutionary period and that.
And how old were you do you mind me asking, how old were you when your dad went to the Congo?
I wasn't born. I was only born after he came back.
Okay.
So I remember him going to Cyprus. He was in Cyprus twice, so I remember him going to Cyprus and coming back and that. But the family had been all military and that, stretching back to the British Army days back in the 1800s and that, and then into the Irish Army and that as well when the state was formed.
So the period you cover is 1865 to 1983. So there are some that are quite old. Do you want to run me through some of them? The Catalpa rescue.
Yeah, well, see, John Devine, the greatest of the Fenians, as they say, he had earlier helped break out James Stevens from Richmond Jail, and the inside man on that was John Breslin. And John Breslin was never under any suspicion. He went off to America, started a new life. So when Devine is deported to America after the amnesty of the Fenians. He devises a plan to rescue six military Fenians from Fremantle Prison in Australia. And he uses John Breslin then. He gets Breslin to go over and organise the escape in Australia. And this is organised 11,000 miles away. If you try to do this now with all the technology that we have, can you imagine in 1876 that to go out and to buy a ship and call it a Catalpa, rig it out as a whaler, go off whaling in the South Pacific or the South Atlantic for 6 months, then head off to Australia and rendezvous with six prisoners who were just broken out of Fremantle Prison, get them on the boat. And the crew don't even know about this.
Yeah.
There's only two people on board the ship actually know what they're doing. And the crew have no idea until they see these six lads and a couple of Fenians running out onto a beach and jumping into their boat and heading back to the Catalpa. And then they're chased by a British frigate with armed police and a small cannon on board who threatened to fire on them, but to run up the American flag, the Stars and Stripes, and the captain says, Captain George Anthony, he's an American. He says, if you fire on this flag, you fire on the United States. So it would have started an international incident, so the British had to let them go then.
Records of prisoners in Ireland as well, they're sealed. You don't get access to those for how many years before, let's say, you get access to Mountjoy's records?
Well, a lot of them are on Find My Past or Ancestry like that. You'll see some of the older ones, the 1920s ones and that you will see. The records for prisoners in the Civil War you will access in the military archives to have prison registers and that. Well, it's a lot of work going through all these, but the newspapers, contemporary accounts from the time and all are what I use. So I try and get a flavour of what people are thinking and what people are saying at the time. I love the story then when Dev breaks out of Lincoln Jail and Harry Boland is there and he wraps a fur coat around him and pretends that they're a courting couple walking across the green because there's loads of British soldiers with their girlfriends there, and they get into a taxi and they get out. But Dev says that if I had locked the gate of the jail when I was going out, no one would ever know how I got out, and three of them escape out through it.
We're concentrating really on men. We're talking all about men, but there were of course female prisoners, and there were female Republican prisoners as well. Did any of them manage to escape?
Yeah, that's a great story too, is in it as well. There's escape of four women from Mountjoy Jail. These would have been Republican activists, and one of them, Linda Cairns, had opened a hospital, a field hospital in 1916 during the Rising. But she was treating both civilian, Republican and British soldiers wounded, and the British authorities made her close it down unless she just helped British soldiers. But she said she was helping everyone. She ends up in the Hammond Hotel then as well. She's there when Cahill Brewer gets killed, when he dies. And then she was formally arrested in 1921 in Sligo with a carload of guns and ammunition and that, and they bring her back to the local barracks, and some of the auxiliaries give her a hard time and that, to bring out the lads that are with her, pretend to shoot them and that, to terrorise her, to put her in the morgue then as well, because there's nowhere to house a woman at this stage. And then she shifted all around different prisons. She even goes over to Liverpool Women's Prison, and then they bring her back to Mountjoy. And at this stage, she's fed up. She says, right, I'm getting out of here either way. So with three others then to break out of Mountjoy Jail. And there's only about 50 women jailed during the whole War of Independence period, where there's about 5,000 men. So as you say correctly, women are not jailed as much as men, whether it's criminal or whether it's political. You don't see that many women in jail. So it's great to see a jailbreak by the women.
Well, you start in 1865, you finish in 1983 with The Escapes from Long Kesh. The book, it's a lovely book, by the way, and in the middle of it, which I know is an expensive thing to do, is there are pictures as well, and some great snaps. There are literally some home snaps from people that you've found, as well as posters and reward posters from the RUC and front pages of newspapers as well, all printed. And some of the women that we talked about are printed.
There's a great picture of the women.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right here.
The teeth are.
Yeah, with the rifles in their hands and the long coats as well.
Formidable looking girls, all right.
So look, the book is from Merrion Press, and it is, I say, I'd highly recommend it. It's a lovely book. It's easy to read as well, which is, it's written in language that you can understand. It's not an academic book.
No.
In the
definitely.
Sense, I'm not saying that you didn't put the effort in that an academic book would take, but that you've just made it. You've made a readable book, which is very important.
Brilliant.
So you might be able to go on a holiday. No, I don't know where you'd be going.
No, I am going on a holiday. No. Definitely. You can go to Sicily next month.
You can go to Sicily, and if you sell a few more, you may be able to go to Ireland on your holidays. Has the writer included in his book the attempted escape from Galway jail in 1920-21? And the escape tunnel came too close to the surface, and a sentry on duty fell into the tunnel. All Republican prisoners were sentenced to 3 months solitary confinement for their efforts. I believe they hid the earth dug out from the tunnel in a cell that was normally used to confine inmates with mental health issues. That's from Tom Shocks in Galway. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, but that's not in it. It's probably be in part two.
Oh, part two. You need to go somewhere else after Sicily.
Holiday a year now. Can I say when the launch?
Absolutely.
About the launch? The launch
anything
is
you want
on
to say.
Nace Library and Cultural Centre on the 28th of August, Wednesday at 7 o'clock, and anyone and everyone is invited. It'll be launched by Art McCoy, whose father, Sean McCoy, escaped from Tintown Barracks in April 1923 through a tunnel. And we have a direct link then to an escapee. So
brilliant. So that's next Wednesday in Nace Library and Cultural Centre, and a fabulous facility it is too.
Oh, fabulous, yeah, definitely.
And great to hear my friend James Durney getting airing on the national radio. That's from he said, historian par excellence. That's from Jim Doyle.
Oh, my good friend Jim. Yeah, we went to Maynooth College together.
P.S. I have my passport ready. No, he didn't say that. James Durney, historian and author. Thanks for joining us.
From the North Tech Studio, followed by your message to 80889.